from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of Dance Kaleidoscope's upcoming performance, All the World's a Stage.
Road trip, I'll find out about the Creative Spaces Rural Places Art Tour.
Cool. And I'll check out a new dance therapy program for people with Parkinson's. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. As part of the celebration of Dance Kaleidoscope's 40th anniversary in Indianapolis, the company will be celebrating Shakespeare this March with their show All the World's a Stage. The show includes new works by DK's David Hochoy, as well as a new work by guest choreographer Norman Walker, who was one of David's dance teachers in New York City when David was first starting his career in dance. Travis DiNicola spoke with Hochoy and Walker to find out more.
David, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
Thank you, Travis. Thank you so much for having us on the show.
Absolutely. And Norman, welcome. Very nice to meet you and have you here.
Oh, it's very nice to meet you, and I'm very pleased to be here, Travis.
Well, this is really exciting. I mean, David, this is another big part of your whole 40th anniversary celebration for Dance Kaleidoscope. And when I heard that you were doing a Shakespearean theme piece, I thought, well, of course, because for years, Dance Kaleidoscope performed at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival at on the green stage, right? And so, I mean, Shakespeare's been a big part of what you have done for years.
Yes, we were very much a part of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival for 10 years, and I saw certainly a lot of Shakespeare out there. And also, as part of the green show, we had to do some themed shows that were tied into the plays that were being performed there. So I got to know the Shakespearean plays very well.
Well, excellent. So that certainly was part of the motivation for this. And so now you get to have two new pieces,
that
you're debuting, one that Norman is debuting. And when the postcard for this came out, the title, All the World's the Stage, is the title for the evening. But Norman, I'm going to start with you because the title listed on the postcard that people are seeing is just a new work with the title to be announced. But you have a title you're going to share with us right now in Art of the Matter.
I will announce it now. Remembrance of Things Past.
And this is not in reference to Proust. This is straight Shakespearean language.
It has nothing to do with Proust whatsoever.
Okay. So tell me what it does have to do with.
Okay, what it has to do with are the sonnets, since that quote is from the sonnets. It has to do with the poet remembering his relationships as they are written in the sonnets. But that takes place within the context of a stage where he's a dramatist, so we never forget that. And out of the backstage flurry comes one of the dancers who becomes the poet, who then goes through his remembrances.
Now, will spoken word be used as part of this?
Yes.
Okay.
Excerpts from the sonnets, from probably about eight or nine of the sonnets, I use spoken and integrated with the music.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one very important solo of the poet is basically percussion and nothing but the words, but the words spoken straight through, amplified, doubled, repeated, mixed up, deconstructed, but you get the whole sense of it.
And the music is going to be a big part of this, too, and it's a commissioned piece by composer Frank Felice.
Absolutely, yes. He and I have worked together very closely on what this is all about, and the music actually, the inspiration, I guess, you would say, was Monteverdi's madrigals.
Mm-hmm.
I sent a whole bunch of them to Frank, and he, and I told him which ones I felt fit the section, but he had choices, and he used that only as a basis. You will not hear a madrigal in the entire piece.
Okay. Fair warning, then.
But very interesting and beautiful sections have come out of this. I think it's an absolutely splendid piece of Frank's.
Now, Norman, you're here as a guest choreographer for Dance Kaleidoscope, but this is not the first time that you've worked with David or with Dance Kaleidoscope, correct?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I was at Butler for 5 years teaching, mm-hmm. and during that period I worked with the company and with David very closely. And even after I left for the first couple of years, I continued to work with the company.
And you were actually one of David's teachers way back when, from what I've heard, at Jacob's Pillow, right?
Yes, that's
true. We won't ask for the year on that, but David, it must be very satisfying to work with someone who's been a colleague and a mentor, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. Norman was one of my first teachers in 1973. It was at Jacob's Pillow, and I was just a fledgling young student, and Norman was pretty tough, but he had a huge impact on me.
So, and you still choose to work with them.
Absolutely. You know, the thing about dancers is that we love our tough teachers because they teach us so many lessons that we need to learn.
And one of the things that's so beautiful and special about dance is what occurs within dance education. That almost unlike any other art form, where you have to have that relationship between teacher and student, passing down from mm-hmm. generation to generation, from class to class, from style to what have you. And there's so much great history within the world of dance because of those relationships that I know you can trace back. You know, once removed from this famous dancer or this famous choreographer.
Absolutely. I think that, it's one of the few things that still has to be passed down from generation to generation with a live teacher, mm-hmm. because there are some things you simply cannot learn from a computer, and dance is one of them. Mm-hmm. You need a live person in the studio with their hands on you, showing you what to do.
Videotape only goes so far.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, David, tell me about Romeo and Juliet Fantasy, which is the new piece that you're choreographing.
Okay, it's... It's my version of Romeo and Juliet. It's because I wanted to choreograph the Romeo and Juliet Fantasy Overture by Tchaikovsky. I've been listening to it since I was a teenager. I loved it as a teenager. I would turn off all the lights in my house, I don't know what you say, and put on this music and close my eyes and listen to how incredibly melancholic and dramatic Tchaikovsky was. And so I've always wanted to choreograph it, and this is what has come out. It's an unusual take.
Is it a duet? I mean,
it's a full company piece. It's a group work, mm-hmm. And I'll go so far as telling you that everything comes out of the group. We have three sets of Romeos and Juliets, who tell the story in different little aspects of it.
Because
the way Tchaikovsky composed the music, it's not linear at all. He doesn't tell the story in a linear fashion. Mm-hmm. So I don't either. I assume everybody knows the story anyway, because everybody knows the story.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't not know the story.
Right.
But, so now, will there be any text used in your piece, or your piece is
no text.
Okay. It's a dance piece. Now, these are the two pieces. Are there any other pieces that night, or these are the two pieces being featured?
This is it.
And All the World's a Stage. Very, very exciting. So, and David, tell me about your dancers, because you have some absolutely amazing dancers. I know that Kenneth Shane Patton is going to be featured in Norman's work.
Correct. He is our most senior dancer. He's been with us for almost 13 seasons, I think.
Wow.
And so he's a veteran.
Yes.
And Norman loves to use him in his works. So that's really wonderful. But we also have some... up-and-coming young dancers, too. And I think what's great about the concert is that it showcases both the senior dancers and the younger dancers. It gives the younger dancers a chance to shine as well.
And this performance takes place at the IRT, which
is
really
correct.
Kind of your second home.
Yes, we love being at the IRT, and this is on the main stage. Our last production was on the upper stage, but this is on the main stage. And we love being... on both stages. People love the upper stage, they say, because it's so intimate.
It is.
You can see that dancers close up.
And sort of you can have seating all around the stage.
That is
and
correct.
It is very intimate. But the main stage is so much more theatrical, I would think. Very
well, it gives it a bigger scale. It gives us a bigger scale to play with. You know, and as choreographers we love to have that big scale, because
lots of space.
Well, it's also that the dancers seem larger than life, and they become universal characters. you know, they become archetypal, so which is really a wonderful thing to do.
Well, and that works so well within the theme, of course.
Yes, of course.
The Shakespearean piece.
And Shakespeare, of course, was larger than life. I mean, all of his passions and his sentiments were much, much, much larger than life.
So tell me just a little bit, if you will, about the process for each of you in terms of creating a new work. I mean, you've decided, obviously, a while back to go with the Shakespearean theme. But when coming into this to bring this to work with the dancers, how much work is done ahead of time? How much work is created in the studio? Either one of you that'd like to jump in on that. Norman?
Well, I'll start. And an interesting thing is I happen to be a Shakespeare buff. I've read every play. I've even read plays that are not attributed to him completely, and et cetera, et cetera. I was actually, we were scheduling for me to work with the company next season when I received a card with the season on it, and I saw All the World's a Stage, a tribute to Shakespeare. I called David and said, David, can we possibly do it then? That's when I'd love to do it.
How fun.
And he didn't pause very long and said, sure.
That's fantastic.
And so my first idea was to do the sonnets. I've been interested in the sonnets, and I wanted to theatricalize them in some way. Obviously, the sonnets are very controversial, but that's fine. I hope my piece will be slightly controversial in that in the same sense. But we're talking about a man thinking and remembering his loves. And then, of course, because of those, his loves were so intense, his jealousy, and then finally his betrayal by both the young beloved and the dark lady. And it wasn't helped by the rival poet either. He got in there, too.
This is quite a story there.
Well, it's not quite a linear story either, but it's the way someone might remember the highlights.
Which is why dance is such a great medium for it.
I think so, too.
David, how about you? Tell me just briefly about your process.
Well, usually my process starts with music. And I have to get
as you said, you were dancing to Tchaikovsky back when you were kids.
So. Yeah, and usually I get to know the music really, really well. I play it thousands and thousands of times until I know it backwards and forwards inside my head. Then I get these ideas and I try to work them out in the studio. Now, with the Tchaikovsky, it was a problem-solving expedition because if you know the music at all, the first 5 minutes of it is this lugubrious set of chords, and I was like, I really didn't know how the hell I was going to do this. So it took a lot of thought, a lot of experimentation.
And you do use all that music then?
I do use all of the music. Okay. From the curtain opens, the music starts, and the dancing begins. And I was pretty pleased with myself when I finally figured out how I was going to use the music.
Well, now I'm really intrigued.
Well, yeah. I hope you are.
Absolutely.
But that's usually what happens with me is that I usually let the music take me where I need to have it. I don't try to superimpose my ideas on top of the music.
Well, David, Norman, thank you so much for coming into Art of the Matter today. I'm looking forward to this. It sounds like it's just going to be a tremendous night of dance, and should be a lot of fun and great to see new works by both of you up on the stage that night.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much.
Travis DiNicola with Dance Kaleidoscope's David Ho Choi and guest choreographer Norman Walker. The dance concert All the World's a Stage was made possible with a grant from the O'Donnell Green Music and Dance Foundation, which funded Mr. Walker's work and the original music for his dance piece written by Frank Felice. The show takes place from March 29th through April 1st at the IRT, and ticket information is at irtlive.com, irtlive.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Creative Spaces Rural Places Studio Art Tour Weekend will take place Saturday and Sunday, April 14th and 15th, throughout galleries, studios, and businesses in three southeast Indiana counties. Nearly 50 artists are scheduled to appear in locations in Ohio, Switzerland, and Dearborn counties. Sharon Gamble spoke with artists Jody Cole Millay and Martha Bladen, as well as Rising Sun Ohio County Tourism Director Brett Stoll, about this fifth annual event.
So this is the fifth year for Creative Spaces Rural Places, and ladies, Jody and Martha, I want you to tell me what your experience was like last year. You were both participants last year, right?
Yes, it was wonderful. I've got to tell you, we had visitors from all over. And one of the nice things about our tour is it's very interactive. So people got to enjoy seeing and being part of demonstrations. And another really interesting thing about this tour was we have so many different types of artists. So it was exciting, it was fun, and we all enjoyed it, anyone that was in it. And this year it's going to be even bigger.
Well, this year we have about 50 different artists, and it's spread out through three counties. And some of them are in private studios, some are in public community art galleries, and so it's a wide range of venues.
And how are the artists selected?
Well, this year we opened up the tour to artists in City of Aurora and Dearborn County, and also the artists and artisans who are already in Ohio and Switzerland counties. So it's open to everyone who's part of our arts communities. I believe Jody is part of a couple of the art guilds, and so is Martha, and that's how we introduce the people to the program.
And go ahead.
I'm sorry. One of the fabulous things about this tour is the artists that are in this area. I think that there's not an awareness of the skill and level of some of the artists we have here. We have Vera Kernell, who's written 9 books and is the founder of the Colored Pencil Society. We have just so many. Rosemary
Butterball.
She does wonderful monotype. We have Marge Beinkemper up in Aurora, who does tied silk and dyed material that's beautiful. And Lane Hess does glass. And we just cover so many areas, from photography to watercolor, oil paint. It's an interesting tour.
In fact, we had a great piece on display down at the tourism office here in Rising Sun from Jan West. She's made donkeys and life-size chess pieces and others out of baling twine.
Cool.
That's just incredible artwork that I've never seen anywhere else.
Hey, she could make some elephants, and leading up to the election in the fall, she could have them duke it out. They could be opposite players in a chess game, I'm just saying.
It's really interesting. It's all she has it in her garden, so it's a lovely place to tour.
Cool. What do you do to prepare for, I mean, this is a little different than preparing for a gallery show, although it kind of is, but it's like a gallery show on steroids. Do you try to, each of you try to create a lot of new work, or do you go to your studio and cull from work that you already have? Or Jody, tell me first, let's start with you, and tell me how do you prepare?
Well, I think art is such an ongoing process anyway that you know, I'm always working on work. I put some extra things, such cards and prints, that I don't normally do, because I know that, you know, people may be looking for something that's a little less expensive and just a memento of the tour. And sometimes I don't keep the studio quite as neat as it will be this time.
No, I'm shocked. It's like putting your home on a home tour. You have a hard stop date for all those things you've been meaning to put away.
Oh, that's the truth. And with pastels, it's very messy anyway, so.
Right, right. Martha, how do you prepare?
Well, I kind of have to do a lot of organization because I do a lot of repurposed art or artful reuse, however you want to phrase it. So I'm using materials that were intended for one purpose and changing it into another purpose in a work of art, we hope. And so I have to organize all these different things. Like one thing is I make button bracelets out of vintage buttons, and so I've got them all organized by, you know, by color and size and if they're carved or non-carved and that sort of thing. And then I do things with postage stamps, and I started doing this for a quilt show entry, and it's literally taking postage stamps, but the term postage stamp quilt usually means a quilt made with very small pieces. But
right.
I literally take the postage stamps and create quilt designs out of those. And so I have all of my stamps sorted into, you know, whether they're animals or plants or presidents or holiday, and so all those. And so I have to pull out all these things so that the people who visit can see all of what are my raw materials, basically. And so I have to kind of declutter my usual stuff and bring out all the art stuff. And another thing that I like about sharing my home for the tour is that I kind of collect art by our local artists. And so when somebody comes, they get to see a lot of work by some of the other people that they'll be seeing on the tour.
One of the things, before we move on, I want to ask you, are those canceled stamps?
Yes, they are all canceled stamps.
So,
my idea is that I'm reusing something that would ordinarily be thrown out or no longer used, and so definitely canceled stamps.
So everybody you know is saving their mail and sending it to you.
It's amazing where I can be, and somebody will say, oh, I have some stamps for you, and hand me a little, you know, packet of them. So, yeah, they show up all over the place.
That's great. One of the things I like about this kind of a tour is that visitors have a chance to watch artists work in their studio. How do you decide? Do you just get out whatever you're currently working on, or do you try to sort through and say, well, this would be the most representative, or this would be the most interesting thing for a visitor to watch me work on? What's that process of selection like?
Well, this is Martha. My process is just whatever I've currently been working on. And when you have people coming and going throughout the day, it's hard to really focus on the art very much. So I try and have something where I'm working on a particular project so I can pick it up and put it down, because we actually don't get a whole lot of the artwork done. But that's the good part about it, getting to visit with everybody.
Sure.
Yeah, Martha's right. And of course, every time you do art, it's an adventure, and you're trying to do your best. So, it's fun to be involved with it, and it has to be something that you really want to show what you normally do and the quality of work that you usually do.
That makes sense, Jody. How did you come to focus on pastels? And I understand that you mix other mediums in with the pastels, but what about pastels drew you? Oh, that was a terrible pun. I'm sorry. Totally unintentional.
I kind of liked it.
Sorry.
Actually, it's kind of a silly story, but I remember many, many years ago walking through a mall looking at, there was an art show there, and there was some pastels of animals. And the animals were so soft, and I felt like I could pet them.
Aww.
So I wanted something that combined this softness and yet could produce the color that would be exciting. Pastels combine the best of two worlds. I can draw and I can have color. I can make soft, I can make baby faces, or you can make steel. It's just, it's a wonderful medium, but it's very messy. I used to practice in the kitchen, and before green eggs and ham were popular, my kids knew what purple mashed potatoes were.
Organic art.
Right.
Martha, I understand that you were essentially recycling before that word was terribly popular. How did you hit on the idea of recombining materials or finding materials? And is this just a way of life for you now when you're out looking at things to do? The shapes automatically recombine themselves in your head?
Well, it's just that you start to see art in lots of places and things that you would ordinarily throw away. Like my sister has a meat market in a deli, and they do a lot of wine and beer tastings. And she recently gave me this box full of the little cardboard carriers for domestic or craft beers because they have such neat designs on the cartons. And she said, well, I thought you might be able to do something with it. And so I cut them all into parts and sorted them and cut them into shapes. And now I have a large framed quilt piece that was made out of these beer cartons, you know. So it's just kind of seeing the art in other things.
Do you have trouble knowing when to let go of raw materials? I mean, how do you not just fill up your studio?
Because I
would do that.
Okay, glass, plastics, things like that. I have my bags for recycling, and I take them to drop-off places or leave them, you know, as part of the recycling program in town. No, I don't have problems with that. And once in a while, I kind of glean through things if I've had it for a while, and I think, you know, it doesn't have the attraction it once did, and then it moves on.
Good, good. Let it go. Some other artist will find it and recycle it.
Yes, yes.
Are you both involved with the Indiana Artisan Program?
I am not, Martha. I am not.
No, I'm not either. I keep meaning to do it, but sometimes the schedule and work to be done, you know, takes more time than I would like. And it's a wonderful process, and it's something Indiana certainly should be proud of.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a young program as well. And
right.
I know that there's some cross promotion between that and this tour. I should mention, and Brett, you're going to jump back in here to help us because, you know, looking at art, talking with artists it takes a lot of energy, and we might need a little bit of fuel along the way. And that's part of this event as well. Yeah. Eating and drinking.
Oh, absolutely. The tour map that is being developed on our website actually showcases some of the area restaurants. I know that we've made it interactive so that you can plot along where you'd like to stop and eat and where you need to stop and refuel as you work your way through the tour. Something that's also very nice is that most of our tour follows the riverfront, but we also have a number of studios that are out in the backcountry hills, if you will. So you come up on the ridges, down in the valley, down along the river, back up, but it's up to you how you travel. So we have Chinese food, we have Mexican food, we have some local dishes, we have some chains in the area, and you can determine where you want to go and which studios to visit and just plot out your whole day ahead of time.
And you don't have to be competitive. You don't have to visit every single studio, gallery, art center, and so forth.
You can do it in a very leisurely way. Come to see one, you can come to see all 50. We hope you come for the weekend.
One of the nice things, though, is we do have two art centers where Aurora will have 15 artists in one building. And I believe Vivi is having also an art center with quite a few in it. So you'll be able to see a lot of variety. Pendleton is going to be open also with quite a few artists in it.
Yeah, Robbie King over at the King and I, which is a shop in or attached to the Pendleton Art Center, has a number of artists who will be displaying with her in her shop that weekend because they're in-house studios. They either weren't ready to bring people in or it was kind of far afield and they wanted to draw more in so it's easier for people to see them.
Sure. And listeners, if you're thinking, I'm getting pretty excited about this, stay tuned. We're about to give you the web address where you can go and plot out your own adventure. Folks, thank you so, so much, especially thank you for staying around on a Friday night and figuring out the phone logistics of this. I really appreciate it. Kendall, thanks for remembering me and emailing me in the first place to get this show on the road.
Well, thank you so much for having us on your program again. It was great to work with you a couple of years ago, and we're really glad you're having us back. So,
well, you guys made it sound like something that should be on everybody's to-do list. So, and I know there's a lot more information, but we'll get that in the introduction and the ending script and get everybody sent over to your website so they can plot their own adventure.
That'll be great. There's just one request I have from you. This is Jody.
What's that?
Rosemary's last name. I can't believe I did that. you know what's funny? I said to myself earlier, be sure not to use that name.
So you would like me to take it out?
If you wouldn't mind.
Okay.
I don't want to embarrass this woman.
All right. I can do that. No worries.
If you knew Rosemary.
Yeah.
If you knew Rosemary.
Okay.
Actually, you know, we could start a betting pool in here because there might be good money in keeping it in.
You see what kind of people I work with.
I so do. I'm so worried about you. Don't worry. I don't want to get anybody in trouble, so I'll go back. That's the beauty of digital editing. Easy to find and fix.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right.
And thank you so much for making the time for this.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Just a great opportunity for us here.
Thanks to you all. Okay. Behave yourselves.
Again,
go get a nice dinner, all of you, together or separately.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Sharon Gamble with artist Jody Cole Millay and Martha Bladen, as well as Rising Sun Ohio County Tourism Director Brett Stoll. The 5th Annual Creative Spaces Rural Places Studio Art Tour Weekend will take place on Saturday and Sunday, April 14th and 15th. Guests are invited to enter into artist studios, galleries, homes, and local businesses to view hundreds of pieces of fine art and crafts and meet the artists who create them. The tour is from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on both Saturday and Sunday and is free and open to the public. Participating artists will have artwork available for sale. For more information on the artists and their locations, visit creativespacesruralplaces.com. Information can also be attained by contacting the Rising Sun Ohio County Tourism Commission at 888-776-4786. So creativespacesruralplaces.com or 888-776-4786.
Listener's going to take up a collection and buy us a sound effects CD one of these years.
Just to have our very own so we don't have to make up our own.
Is that like a cartoon impersonation or what's going on over there?
Boing.
Spring. It's a spring.
A spring has sprung, Sharon. It's spring.
Happy
it's officially spring now.
Equinox.
There we go. See?
Oh, I get it.
So, on the calendar that...
Do we have some springy things to do?
We're in a spring on our listeners called
What'll We Do? Boing.
Boing. The boing edition.
You're scaring me.
Hey, you know, when you think of Desperate Housewives, lots of champagne, a French boyfriend, I'm not talking about Sunday night TV. I'm talking about a Noel Coward play here.
I bet I know what you're talking about.
Fallen Angels at the IRT.
Aww.
Very, very fun show. I always just enjoy any of Noel Coward's work.
Me too.
And this one has just opened and runs through April 15th and should be a ton of fun, worth checking out, and very witty.
Where do I sign up for that? Champagne French boyfriend?
Yeah, and
is there a website
housewives.
For that?
There could be. We'll talk about that after
okay.
the show.
Okay. well, you are invited on the 24th to The Back Room, A Night at the Speakeasy. You're invited to don your flapper dress or raccoon coat. Ooh.
Speaking of elegant things,
and join the cabaret at the Columbia Club as they transform their space into a 1920s speakeasy. It's in celebration of Women's History Month, and the fabulous Cynthia Lane celebrates the music of Prohibition's jazz age when women got the right to vote and flappers flooded the speakeasies, daring to drink cocktails and dance to hot jazz. Don't forget the password hooch will get you in the door. I am not making this
That's
up.
That's fantastic.
The evening includes, and this is a hot trend right now, Prohibition era cocktails, vintage cocktail book, wet drinks for dry people, launch party, And nice. Prizes for the best costumes. Find out more at thecabaret.org. And I am so not making that up. That's all.
Wow, that sounds...
It sounds like fun, doesn't it?
And that's on Saturday?
That's on Saturday night, this Saturday night.
Excellent. So, and then after you go to the Spies, on Sunday, you can hear something maybe a little bit different with a celebration of Women's History Month. Regina Marie Falker, soprano, will be featured in a concert that is part of Women's History Month. Women in Peril, in Prayer, in Love. And this is at the Covenant Community Church. So a little bit of different tone
there.
Wow. yeah, it is open to the public. All are welcome. And it is on Sunday at 4 p.m. So you can, you know, sing
a tone
it up
for the night
exactly.
before. I see how this works. It's all about balance in the universe. Speaking of women and Women's History Month, well, this isn't really about women's history, but it does feature a female storyteller, Luann Homan, who is telling the story about Charlie Creek Inn in Wabash, Indiana. Now, she's going to tell that story. This is part of the If These Walls Could Tell series about interesting old buildings around the state. The first one was last year about the old Centrum. This story you can hear on Saturday, March 21st at 7:30 at the Indiana Landmarks Center. That's kind of a sneak preview because Luann's going to tell that story at the Charlie Creek Inn this coming summer as part of Wabash, Indiana's Arts Festival. So you hear it on this Saturday night, the 24th. And then hear it again if you like it. More information at Luann, L-O-U-A-N-N, Homan, H-O-M-A-N.com.
She's such a great storyteller.
She is.
Very, very cool. Okay, here's something a little bit different. Mead Never Want to Recover. It's a show of unique film photography by Andrew Bridges, and it is taking place at New Day Meadery and their tasting room down in Fountain Square on Prospect Street. So you can sample some of the mead and check out the photographs as well when this opens up. It opens on First Friday. Lots of things will be coming up on the First Friday in April, April 6th. Their reception is from 6 to 9, but this is a new venture for the New Day Meadery to have an art show there as well.
So, we're kind of going back to dissolution and being naughty for a moment.
Well, you might be, but okay.
It's The Bachelorette, which is a fun and promoted as a wicked comedy about the night before I do. It's being marketed as for mature audiences only. And you can see it at the John Waldron Arts Center. It's a production of Cardinal Stage Company. And that is going on for another week or so. So The Bachelorette, find out what happens before the vows are exchanged.
I keep feeling like I'm trying to balance you out here, Sharon, because the next thing I want to mention is Passions, a passion play for believers, skeptics, and the third millennium. And this is actually taking place at the Christian Theological Seminary. And it will also feature, it is a play, but it also features a talk with the CTS president and professor of theology, Dr. Matthew Meyer Bolton, who's been on Art of the Matter before.
Yeah, great.
And so that will follow each performance. And that will be coming up on April 2nd and 3rd at the Shelton Auditorium at CTS. Both shows are at 7 p.m. And this is a passion play that features gospel music and a very interesting story, but it is billed for all audiences. Worth checking out.
I'll see you passions and raise you one Messiah on the Frigidaire.
Wow, okay.
We are balancing one another out. This is a tongue-in-cheek piece by John Culbertson at Theater on the Square through the end of this month.
Okay, well, then I will raise you some Freud for Freud's Last Session, which has opened at the Phoenix Theater and is running through April 15th. And yes, it is actually a play that deals with Freud. On the day that England enters the Second World War, legendary psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud, just weeks before he takes his own life, invites the young rising author C.S. Lewis to his home in London, and hilarity ensues, or at least a really interesting drama. Maybe not hilarity at all, but definitely worth checking out.
Actually, I saw that last Saturday night, and there is a fair amount of humor in it. You wouldn't think there would be with a theologian and the father of psychoanalysis, but they kind of tease each other and have kind of a father and son-esque relationship. Hmm. So, hey, if you're a filmmaker, I want to give you a heads up to something that's not coming up until mid-May. It's the E.T. 30-hour film festival. Your film crew will pick one of five genres and make a short film all in 36 hours. You need to register beforehand, but the start is at 7:36 p.m. on May 18th, and you wrap up and submit your film at 7:36 a.m. on May 20th. If you just suddenly started brainstorming a million ideas to do for that, go to etfilmfestival.com to find out more and register your team.
Very good. Hey, last thing that I want to give artists a heads up on is Installation Nation is coming back. This is the event that Primary Colors has presented a number of years, and it will be taking place on June 15th and 16th this year, and they are looking for 12 artists who will compete to create great installation pieces as part of the work. The deadline to get your submissions in is Friday, April 20th, so start working on that now. If you go to the Primary Colors website at primarycolors.org, you can get more information about how to submit your work for Installation Nation.
Mm-hmm. Hey, my last note, since we are celebrating both Spring and Women's History Month, is don't forget Steel Ponies at the Idlejorg. It's an exhibit about motorcycles, but believe it or not, there's lots of special programming, including some great information about the history of women and motorcycles. Women have been riding motorcycles since they were developed more than a century ago. So you can find out lots.
Not just side saddle.
And not just side saddle. No, they were were in the driver's seat.
High on the hog.
Okay. Find out more at idlejorg.org. And meanwhile, I know you're tempted, but don't go out and plant things yet. The frost-safe planting date isn't till Mother's Day.
Good to know. Thank
I'm
you,
just
Sharon.
Saying.
We'll be back next week with more arts ideas and perhaps a few gardening tips on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Dance for PD is a program that began in Brooklyn offering dance classes for people with Parkinson's disease. This therapeutic dance program now takes place in more than 75 other communities, including Indianapolis. Travis DiNicola spoke with local organizers and dancers Trish Martin, Roberta Wong, and Janet Thornton about Dance for Parkinson's Indy.
Trish, Roberta, Janet, welcome to Art of the Matter. Since we have three of you, just so we know each other's voices, Trish, say hello.
Hello.
And Roberta?
Hello.
And Janet.
Hi there.
Thank you all for being here today. Looking forward to hearing more about and understanding more about the Dance for Parkinson's project. Who would like to start with providing some background as far as how this started more on a national basis, and then we can talk about how it came here and what you guys are doing here.
Yeah,
Janet?
We really got our inspiration from the Dance for PD program out of New York, Brooklyn, New York, from the Mark Morris Group, and got some training through them. They've been running a fabulous program for the last 11 plus years, and they've just been doing some inspiring things. So it kind of has been catching on nationwide, and so here we are today.
And what brings you to this is you're not really a professional dancer yourself, just a fan of dance, right?
I'm a fan of dance and music, always.
Okay, and have a family member who has Parkinson's, so that's sort of what's drawing you into this.
Right. My dad's been suffering from Parkinson's, or living with Parkinson's, I should say, for about 11 years. And so I've seen it up close and personal, and it's been an interesting process. But the more movement we know that they can get, the better.
Absolutely. Now, did you know Trish and Roberta before this, or this sort of brought you all together?
It brought us all together, and I'm so thankful to have them. You know, it's been a great process. We've been working on it for probably the last 6 or 8 months, and here we are. We're finally, we've done our first class on Friday, and things are going great. We're getting great response, and we're just really excited.
Trish, tell me a bit about your involvement with this.
Sure. I first heard about a little over a year ago. A friend of mine in Massachusetts had mentioned that they had the program there, and I was already working with dance with Alzheimer's and dementia. And she thought this might be something I was interested in, and mm-hmm. in fact, I was. So I looked into it and ended up applying for a grant from the Indiana Arts Commission to go to Brooklyn to the Mark Morris Dance Center and take the teacher training, which was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, it turned out there were several people here in town that were also interested, and David Leventhal, who runs the program for Mark Morris, came to Indianapolis then and gave the training to us as well as some people in Cincinnati.
Okay. And then, Roberta, how about you? It's great to see you involved with a new dance project. How'd you get involved with this?
It's exciting to be with this team. Actually, my colleague, Erica Jeffrey, who co-run a Dance for Parkinson's project in San Francisco, was the one to turn me on to this project. And quite truthfully, I love, you know, giving back to the community with dance. And I had been actually looking for something to do, such as this. I had actually been considering something with dance for Alzheimer's as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it just all happened the way Providence does, and it all seemed to fall together, and just seemed like a good fit.
So what is it about this type of movement that is beneficial for someone who is living with Parkinson's? Of course, many of us have heard about boxing programs for people who have Parkinson's. And, you know, so I can sort of see the connection, this idea of, you know, a full body movement in a very directed, choreographed, specific way. But what is it just from a physiological standpoint that's so important to have that type of activity? Janet, Trish, either one.
Well, dancers in general, I think, have a keen awareness of movement.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, living with Parkinson's, you really have to make your movements intentional. I've seen people with all different kinds of symptoms, but there's this sort of freezing up that can happen where they really have to sort of put themselves in a different mental place to make the next step or to, you know, to do something that they're trying to do. So becoming aware and sort of connecting that mind and body is the place that we want to put them in. And dancers tend to be very good about that.
Is this a gross oversimplification? But it seems to say what I'm hearing is that learning how to make intentional movement in practicing intentional movement is a way of dealing with Parkinson's. Is that fair? Or I
mean, well, yeah, that's part of it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is just being a part of a community, of course, you know. General exercise is wonderful. And, you know, what I know about Parkinson's, too, is it can be isolating.
Mm-hmm.
To get them in a social environment where they're creating something artistically and they're with each other and experiencing the same things, it can be very fulfilling.
And that's certainly a big part of this. I know you're working at the Senior Center, and you're working with about a dozen or so people right now. Trish, tell me a little bit more about this as far as dance as therapy.
Well, we aren't dance therapists, actually.
Mm-hmm.
We are dancers, teaching artists. But the idea of putting dance with people who have different, possibly diseases or health-related problems, is therapeutic. So I think we can call it therapeutic movement.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in the physical aspect, because their rigidity and so forth tends to lessen up in these classes, but also, as Janet mentioned, just the camaraderie of being with a group of people that are all in the same boat, really, not having to feel self-conscious about it, and having a good time, just having
mm-hmm.
a lot of fun.
Sounds like that's a really important element in this.
It is. Yeah. I think it is. Yeah.
Roberta, I know that the program just started, but what's your experience been like so far with this?
It's been absolutely wonderful. I'm learning a lot from everyone, and especially from Trish. She is the lead teacher for the pilot program. And it's just something so different than what I've ever done as far as, you know, teaching pre-professional track dancers or teaching any kind of adults that I've done. It's very soul-fulfilling. It's very human. It just sort of brings your whole life into a new focus, and it's really wonderful.
It sounds like you're all going through your own discovery process as well with this. Mm-hmm. Janet, if people want to support Dance for Parkinson's Indy, how can they go about doing that?
Oh, gosh, we would love that. If anyone wants to or is interested in learning more about the program or they're interested in donating, please contact me. I'm the program director. Again, Janet Thornton. My number is 317-775-0155. And checks can be made out to Dance for Parkinson's Indy.
I know, of course, there's the National Dance for Parkinson's website, but you've also got a Facebook page locally, right, that people can like and find out more?
Yeah, I would first encourage you to go to that danceforpd.org website. Mm-hmm. And if you scroll down to the bottom right, there's a great video that gives you an idea of what the classes are like and what we model them after. You can like us on Facebook. It's Dance for Parkinson's-Indy. And then you can just call the Senior Center if you want to reserve a spot. We're going for the next 6 Fridays from 10:30 to noon.
Okay.
And from there, we're not quite sure where we're going to pick up classes, but we'll be in touch with all the participants to let them know where it's going to go.
And participation is not limited to seniors, correct?
Oh, correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's not limited to seniors. And I should say that it is free to all participants. So
always good to know.
Always a bonus.
Mm-hmm. And also their caregivers are welcome to come with
and
them.
And encouraged.
And encouraged, yes.
So, Trish, you were able to get a grant to do this.
Yes.
What do you see as the future for this program?
Well,
and hope for? What are your hopes and dreams?
My hopes. I hope that it continues. I think we've got a great start.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of interest in the community. Janet and Roberta have been great as far as like gearing up everybody to know about it and to come to the classes. At this point, the three of us will be able to teach the classes in the future. So I see it as an ongoing thing. Who knows where it can lead? But it's all good. I think it's just going great so far.
That's very exciting. Thank you to the three of you for doing this work. It's both meaningful and very exciting.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome.
Travis DiNicola with Dance for Parkinson's Indie dancers and organizers, Trish Martin, Roberta Wong, and Janet Thornton. You can find out more at danceforparkinsons.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for an all-Travis show.
Oh, my. Well, thanks. I'll get a preview of music at Cherie Tefillah, an intimate concert series at the congregation Cherie Tefillah. Plus, I'll chat with author Dan Barden about his new novel and find out more about Indiana Youth Group's annual art fair.
Plus, we'll have our arts calendar week haul.
What'll we do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.